Hey listeners, welcome back to The Dreadful Dialogue, a podcast where we chat about all things horror. My name is Elise. As usual with me, my phenomenal co-host is Kristen. What's up, girl?
Hey, how's it going? It's so hot. Oh boy, it's hot out. I'm okay.
I'm not going to talk about that because we're actually having mild weather. So I'm going to shut up. We're on different.
I'm so jealous.
But I'm reading about your guys' crazy, like, crashing of two different heat systems. I'm not a weather person, clearly, and the humidity is out of control. I was out of town for a work convention, and I was talking to people from your area and from the Midwest. And I was I hope you enjoyed your time in San Diego. I'm sure you go home to the miserable weather. They're like, I don't want to go home.
I don't blame them. I don't want to be here, honestly. I'm, like, praying that my air conditioning doesn't go wonky because I heard it struggling this morning, and I'm like, oh, no.
Oh, my.
So, well, yeah. But
hopefully it holds up. And then this movie that we're going to cover.
Yeah.
All vibes, because we're getting into our fall episodes here, and this was filmed in October, takes place in October. So hopefully you get the fall vibes, because we're going to be talking about the Blair Witch Project from 1999.
Yeah. This movie is so wild. I couldn't get over, like, how jumpy it is too. Like, when I was rewatching, I was like, am I like feeling like I'm on a roller coaster? My stomach was like, murr. Maybe it's because I'm old. But do you have a synopsis for us?
Yes, I do. And I felt the same way. I was like, man, I'm getting old. I forgot how rough these found footage films are.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. We watched it clearly when we were much younger. All right.
Yeah.
Synopsis. In October of 1994, three student filmmakers hike into a Maryland forest to shoot a documentary about the legendary Blair Witch, only to get hopelessly lost. As their panic and exhaustion grow, they are terrorized by unsettling, inexplicable occurrences around their campsite each night. Presented as found footage recovered after their disappearance, the film captures their terrifying descent into the woods as they realize something is hunting them.
This movie is really interesting to me because the three main characters were not like actors or anything like that. And they're playing fictionalized versions of themselves.
Yeah. I think they were I think two out of the three really wanted to be actors. And one, I guess he got hired because he kind of wanted to be an actor, but he kind of got the gig because they're like, oh, he knows how to work a camera. But they weren't known actors in any way.
Right, right. That's what I meant. Yeah.
And yeah, they're playing fictionalized versions of themselves. It's not like, you know, even on the credits, it says, you know, it's just their names. So it's interesting.
Right. Yeah, so Heather Donahue plays Heather, and Joshua Leonard is Josh, and Michael C. Williams is Mike. And then we have the most the most wild character, in my opinion, is Patricia Decoux as Mary Brown. And she is a memorable person, to me, at least.
Her and her house.
And her house. Her house, wow. It was really nice.
Yeah.
You know, Mary Brown, I know we'll get into it more, but she is a woman of many talents. She is an actress and a historian and a ballerina.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. A ballerina. So before we get into everything, what was your very first like impression and experience with the Blair Witch Project? Did you believe at any point this could actually be real found footage?
I did, because this was summer of 1999. I'm going into my senior year. Me and my cousin, you know, friend of the pod. You guys have heard her on our episode, Killers That Can Dance. You guys hear me name drop her all the time because she was my original horror partner in crime. And we went and saw it, and like the marketing of this movie made you believe it. This is very early internet. There's not social media where you could find people. They're unknown actors. So it was advertised like this was a legit found footage. Found footage was like around, kind of, you kind of had a Cannibal Holocaust, but nothing had ever been marked. I mean, I think after this movie, that's kind of where they came up with the idea of found footage. So I believed it. It gave me the creeps watching it now. In retrospect, it doesn't scare me. I think modern audiences wouldn't appreciate it as much because it spurred so many found footage movies. Hell House LLC, of course, Paranormal Activity and all that.
It's
mocked by, you know, Scary Movie, which I always say you made it if you get mocked by Scary Movie, if you're a horror movie.
Yeah. That's
yeah, I believed it. Me and my cousin were legit scared during the movie. I was legit scared. I mean, after we were kind of like, was that real? Was that not real? Over time, we were like, okay, we think it's fake. But it was real to us. They had missing posters hanging up at the movie theater for these people.
I know. Yes, I remember that. I saw it in the movies too. I was 16 going into my junior year of high school. I went with friends and we were convinced because also during this time, this is when reality TV started like booming, right? We had like Big Brother, Survivor. We had the real world going on. But I remember this just being like so intriguing. And I'm like, are they really missing people? And it was just really convincing. After I watched it though, that first time I'm like, y'all lied. Y'all lying.
I kind of was like, it scared me. But then, yeah, like you start to wonder, like within a few days, I'm like, nah, but I thought it was so cool. Dude, I actually enjoyed the movie more going into thinking it was fake. And you brought up a good point. Like reality TV is such a common thing now. Like, and reality TV was still in its early stages. So yeah, we were assuming that like we were getting duped by Hollywood in this way.
Right. Now when we watch reality shows, the whole time I'm like, this is so fake. It's not even entertaining to me anymore. And then when I was rewatching this, I was like, it's a little entertaining, but I don't think like, as you said before, if this came out today, I'd be like, meh.
No.
I think it's not that great.
Yeah, it's the kind of movie you introduce. I can't wait till my son gets old enough or I'm like, okay, I think he can handle this level of scare and totally lie to him and be like, don't let him look anything up about the movie. Be like, oh, we're going to watch this movie. Like, oh my God, there was these missing college kids. Just totally play it up so I can get his face and be like, and see if he believes it or not. I think it would be more fun with that kind of audience. You can't go into the modern lens. You have to go and do it kind of like watching Frankenstein and watching Creature from the Black Lagoon. Those are clearly not scary to a modern audience.
Right.
Yourself and the people at the time, those were scary movies to them. We didn't have Freddy Krueger and all this other stuff. And now, like I said, we have all these other found footage movies to the point where I can't even really watch found footage because of what you said. They bounce too much. There's very few found footage movies that I appreciate. Yeah. I like more of the ones where the camera doesn't move as much. Like I know there's a good Romero zombie one, but even then I'm like, it's harder to watch him. The Paranormal Activity was cool. Like, first one, and then it just got sillier.
Yeah, like the first Paranormal Activity, I felt like it wasn't as janky and like a little more convincing, but like this already came out, so you were like, well, I was already duped by Blair Witch, like this is a bunch of BS too, you know. The novelty of it was like sort of wearing off already.
Pioneer movie, you have to give it that credit.
It really is. So before we get into like the whole ordeal, a little bit of the backstory. So there's this legend of the Blair Witch that dates back to the 1700s. She was an Irish immigrant named Ellie Kedward, and she was accused of witchcraft and banished into the woods during the winter where she supposedly died. Years later, children began disappearing. In the 1940s, a hermit named Rustin Parr confesses to murdering 7 children after an old woman in the woods told him to do it. Parr says that he had to stand one child facing the corner while killing another because he couldn't bear being looked at. This final detail becomes extremely important later on in this film. So knowing that backstory, that really makes it convincing because like when you read this, it really sounds like a folklore story.
It seems legit, right? And I've done episodes on folk stories. I grew up hearing in different culture and even not even just your culture. I mean, like where you live geographically, you have stories. Mm-hmm. So it's a great made up folk story. I would believe it. I'm like, okay, you know, I grew up hearing about the Kukui. I think somebody mentioned at some point that they're like, oh, we heard about the Blair Witch. It was a story they would tell us to keep us staying in our bed. And in Latino culture, at least I think Latin America, like we have the which is like the boogeyman or whatever. He didn't actually hear me. I actually thought it was fake. But I remember being at the woods in a cabin with like my aunt and uncle, mine Stella, being like, you guys better behave. The cuckoo is gonna get you. I'm like, there's no real cuckoo. But I was the one who like really actually running around the woods. So I might have actually been scared if I was in the woods. I don't know.
Right. And like where I grew up, we had the Jersey Devil. Okay. And like That was always such a big thing, like in the Pine Barrens of New Jersey. And we live sort of close to that. And I remember, like, if we were driving on the parkway and going through the Pine Barrens, I'd be like covering my eyes. My brother and sister would be crying. Like, we would be terrified, like, that the Jersey Devil was going to get us. But yeah, so this backstory is super convincing. Yeah. So the film opens up. And like the text is very ominous because it says like there's three student filmmakers. They vanished in the woods near Burkittsville, Maryland, and their footage was found a year later. And we cut to this video and there's Heather. She greets Josh. Now, it gives off the impression that like Josh and Heather already knew each other, but they didn't know Mike. They were like, oh, we're going to go pick up Mike and meet him for the first time or something.
Yeah.
Heather.
I think Josh and Mike might have known. You could tell Heather and Mike didn't know each other, but it's right. Like Josh and Mike may have known each other. But then I was like, I guess this makes sense as like a couple of like college student filmmakers are just like, maybe they ran. Maybe they ran an ad or something, or they put it on the college, you know, college cork board or somewhere, and are just like, hey, looking for something to help us film this documentary. I figured that it kind of inferred that the guys knew each other, but Heather definitely didn't know.
Yeah. That's what I thought too. So they go to Burkittsville, which was formerly named Blair, and they interview a bunch of people, right? So they interview this like fisherman guy. There's a waitress who is actually, you mentioned, the sister of one of the directors and writers.
Yeah, of Eduardo.
That's so cool. Yeah. I feel like all these people who were a part of this film, it was like very like family oriented, which I really love.
Very indie.
Yes, very indie. They meet Mary Brown. And Mary Brown looks like she's seen some shit. Like she's rough. And she talks about how she saw a half-human, half-animal creature covered in fur. And the Coffin Rock legend is what she explains it to be. And she tells them, like, she was really scared. And she goes into some of the folklore. And I feel like Heather, Mike, and Josh are like, this lady's cuckoo bananas. Like, do we actually... do we really believe her? Because she claims to be a ballerina, as I said before. Like, she's a woman of many talents. Do you think, like, if you interviewed Mary Brown, you would have believed anything she said?
No. But she would have, but I would have indulged her for pure entertainment purposes. And like I said, like, that's kind of like what happens with you. You only believe it like slightly, because that's what happens with a lot of these folk stories, right? It's like generationally passed down, and then you always have that town crazy their family or a crazy family member that likes to take it a step further.
Right.
And so I don't think I would have believed her, but I totally would have been like, oh really? Yeah, like tell me more. Like this is because it would have been she's a fun character.
She really is. They also talk to this fisherman, as I mentioned before, and he tells them about these ritualistic murders that took place in the 19th century at Coffin Rock. So like confirming kind of what like Mary is telling them. And the bodies were disemboweled and vanished before police could retrieve them. So I don't know if they're really taking this seriously, but when you combine both of these stories, at this time, it sort of seems convincing. So they have their interviews, and then Heather goes into the spiels, like she's doing her narration, and she has the most obnoxious, like mid-Atlantic accent going on. She's like, we are here in Burkittsville, Maryland. I'm like, ma'am, what are you doing? She's adding to the drama. But anyway, so they go on this hike, and they're like getting along okay. It seems like they're chummy. They're having a good time. And so out of the three, is there a particular one that you would trust to survive with during this whole ordeal?
Probably Josh, and I'm just being terrible. I don't know. I felt like he, but then she had the compass in them. I don't know who I would have trusted. I mean, I think if I were, I would have just went into this with like, they're all student filmmakers. They're just trying to make some money, make it big. Like, they're just,
yeah,
it's like those struggling actors, you know. You just, some of them, they're like, I just take any roles I can get. It may not be union. I may not get paid as much. I think you would just go in with like that enthusiasm of being a part of something, yeah, that you might not stop to think about like the other aspects of like, dude, we're going into the woods. Yeah, it's like the map isn't like a real map, right? It's like a, is it like a drawn out map? Or?
It does look like it's a sketched map where it's like, it doesn't have like coordinates, but it's like, it's marked where it's like each mark is like a mile or something like that.
Yeah.
It's very old school. Like when you would give directions.
I would have wanted like a legit, and this is military me talking, a legit USGS map. With that hand map, that's the part that worries me. And I don't think I even thought about any of this at the time. I'm just like,
right.
Know, I don't know who I would either. Maybe Josh. I don't know. He seemed like the most stable from the beginning. Heather seemed too almost gung ho, which they get on her about. Me, so,
yeah,
she trusted.
She definitely comes off as like she wants to be in charge. She wants to be the leader too. So naive. Kristen would probably want to trust Heather from the jump, but then I would see through it and probably be like, Josh, can you help me? Because she's nuts. This one's a little too hyper for me.
Yeah. It was her project, granted. They get on her about that. We'll save that.
Yeah. And she really feeds into the theatrics because she's like doing all these segments in black and white. And it really adds to like the intensity of her narration. They make it to Coffin Rock and they're like, you know what? We're going to camp. That's cool. But they start hearing strange noises. And when I was watching this again, I'm like, this is one of the reasons why I will not go camping. One, I'm not built for the outdoors. And two, every single thing would freak me out. I'd be like, either somebody's going to murder me or I'm going to get eaten by a bear. I don't know. That was just my thought. I'm like, this is the first sign of trouble, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, they're going through. We're on like day three at this point because they're in the fucking woods for like 8 days. It's crazy. So day three comes. Tensions are starting to rise. They're like running out of food. They're exhausted from not sleeping because of all the noises, right? They find like an old cemetery with artificial stones and these artificial grave markings with these piles of like stones and rocks. Josh accidentally knocks one over and Heather makes them rebuild it.
Yeah.
And do you think that plays into what happens to Josh later?
I think so. I mean, I think that was kind of like the first sign of, you tampered with something you weren't supposed to. And that's something that can get you. And is that the time when Heather kind of like, did she kiss it or what did she do? She like said something and puts it back, like apologizes.
Yeah. She apologizes because I guess like because they're so exhausted, she's just like really hoping like none of this is really going to come true. So yeah, the actors were given limited information and were intentionally disoriented, limited food and sleep during filming. Do you think that authenticity comes across on the screen, especially at this point when they're like bickering a bit?
Absolutely. I from what I've read about it, yeah, most of it, they were just given an outline and they were kind of told to improv and they were only given so much food. I would start to lose my shit. And they really did. I even start to wonder, like when you're watching, you're like, okay, like, is it the forest is doing something to them? Is the fish doing something to them? It's believable for sure. And the fact that they are being misled, from what I understand, they were all given secret directions about what they were supposed to improv. And some of their stuff would contradict each other on purpose. So the writers and directors, I almost felt like you guys kind of took advantage of them. They were told it was going to be a grueling shoot, but that they would
look out
for their safety. But I'm like, dude, like you guys aren't feeding them enough. Like, I get hangry when I'm at home in the comforts of my own house, let alone like in a forest, like not show. And that they were literally like actually staying there overnight and everything. So it
They were.
And I think that's what makes it like scarier, because you're seeing raw human emotion, raw human reactions to the situation that they're put in.
Right. And at this point, they're trying to go find the car. And like Heather, the compass that Heather has is not working. And they're basically going in like a huge circle at this point, and they don't even realize it. So morale is like definitely plummeting.
That's exactly the word that is so important. Yeah. Like we teach people, it's like, you have to keep your morale up. And then like the whole compass thing, I'm like, is she using it correctly? You have to hold it a certain way, right. Get affected by metal on you. Like, I don't even think I was paying attention during the rewatch other than I was just like, I hope she knows how to actually use that thing. Like, there's a whole process to how you use a compass, how you measure out your steps to shoot an azimuth, like how to be able to navigate. Like, it's difficult. Like, I learned it in the Army. I learned it as an archaeologist, and I can barely remember because I don't use that shit no more. Like,
yeah,
I'd probably be lost in the woods even though I've got experience.
Exactly. And there's no MapQuest. There's no GPS. No. There's no smartphones or anything.
Nope.
So like they hear all these crazy noises because they're hiking at night, and then they end up back at the campsite. And when they go back, they see these mysterious stick figure structures hanging from the trees above their tent. That, like, even watching that today, I'm like, that is really bizarre. That's imagine going back to that. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's the moment I was
like, nobody, nope. Like, nope. Like I said, even before the movie, nope, me and Paul were nobody, nope people about something. I'd be like, nope, we need to go. And I also read the directors that they gave the actors GPS units that told them what coordinates to get to, but they didn't know that they were tricking them and making them go in a circle. So they're even almost in real life, kind of like, are we getting lost? And all those noises they're hearing, it's that the writer and director were behind them. They were hiding, like following them, and they were the ones making the noises at night. And so like that added to it. It wasn't like they were told, hey, we're gonna make these noises. It was like they probably were legit scared in some way. I don't know if they were legit scared that like an actual witch was gonna get them, but that there was maybe an animal or something out there.
Yeah. It made it so convincing hearing all those noises that they were doing. And I think that was, like, even though it's, like, kind of manipulative and mean, it really added to the movie, though.
Yeah.
Instead of being like, oh, pretend, you know? So at this point, they can't find the map. And the boys think that Heather is just, like, messing with them. And they're like, don't make me go in your pants and get them. And I'm like, what?
Because she kept saying she would hide it. She would put it in the same spot.
Yeah. So eventually Mike snaps during this argument. And he's like, I kicked the map into the water.
I wanted to strangle that fool.
Mike, you MF, what are you doing? But then I thought, like, well, they don't even know where they're going with the map or the compass, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, this is where the whole getting on Heather thing comes into play, right? Because even when they're kind of lost and they're like, they're kind of, the other two are kind of come to the point, like, we just need to get out of here. She's still like lingering to take footage of stuff. And they're like, you just care about your documentary. You probably did this on purpose.
Yeah.
You have the map type of thing. And I read that too, that the directors told him to do that, but that he didn't do it in front of them. So he was kind of giggling too, because he knew at some point I got to kind of spill this like quote unquote secret that he kept the map. But like the way he says it, that's when I'm like, okay, he's delirious, or is the forest have an entity that's doing this to him? You start to wonder, like, is there a supernatural thing going on that's causing this to happen? Why would he just do that? Even if you thought Heather was full of shit and didn't know how to use the map, I would still just keep it because it's like, just to have it. Like, it could be wrong, it could be right, but why risk throwing it away? And so that's when you were just like, oh my God, I'm like, I'm gonna strangle.
I know. And I think like everything just got to him, like you were saying, like it's everything at once, and it really affects your mental health and your stability. So they agree. I think it's like day six at this point. It all really blurs together, you know? Yeah. It does.
It's kind of a weird slow burn movie. It's hard to keep track,
Yeah. So they agree to start walking south. And they're hoping, like, as they're walking south, they're going to hit, like, a major highway or even a side street at this point. Like, they don't even care about finding the car. They just want to find some form of, like, street or a home or whatever.
I love how there's comments. The guy's like, how do you know it's gonna be there? He's like, we're eventually gonna run into something. Come on, America's decimated their environment. She goes on like a little environmentalist speech about like, no, we've cut down our trees, we've cut down our forests. We're gonna run into something.
Yeah. We might find a Walmart. Like
you never know. Exactly.
So
an Amazon warehouse.
Yeah, right. So these poor people walk in another fucking circle. They end up back at the campsite. There's still more hanging stick figures. The paranoia sets in. They realize the woods are looping. Something is being manipulated here. And that night, they hear agonizing noises and like moaning and children crying. And is this what makes the film scary? Is like, we don't see what's happening? Does that add to the fear?
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think it's just like so unknown. Talk about Jaws, your imagination will paint a picture for you. For me, reading scary stuff actually scares me more than usually seeing it, because your mind will really like paint the scariest picture for you. So I think it does. And I also read that Eduardo Sanchez went and filmed that noise from outside of his house. Just kids playing and messing around. And and that they were playing it on, I think this was on an interview I saw of some of the cast, and that they played, they brought out boom boxes and they were like playing those sounds. So again, the actors don't know this.
Right.
Yeah. Do you think the unseen of it messed with you, made it scarier?
Oh, definitely. Because like when you don't see it, you're, as you said before, your mind like creates these scenarios and you start overthinking things. You become paranoid, and it really feeds into that internalized fear and panic that these three people are having. Like when they're freaking out, when they make it back to the campsite for the third time, right? I guess this is the third time. I could feel their panic through the screen, especially with Josh and Mike, because I feel like they were putting so much trust into Heather, and Heather let them down, even though she says that Mike was the one who betrayed them. It's like she just kept she kept testing the limits way too much, and they're falling apart.
Yeah.
Rightfully so. So they wake up the next morning, and Mike and Heather realize that Josh is missing. His shit is scattered everywhere, and he's completely gone. I would have crapped my pants.
Yeah.
Like waking up and being like, my friend or whatever is missing. This is terrifying. So they're walking around. They're like screaming his name. Josh, 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 Josh. No response. And Mike is like, poor Mike. I thought he was going to start crying. And he's like, well, we're still alive because I found a pack of cigarettes at the bottom of my backpack. This is like the one thing poor Mike is holding on to.
To small dose of reality. Instead of somebody pinching him, he's like, I got cigarettes still.
Yeah, right. So it's nighttime, and this is when Heather shoots her iconic close-up apology video. She's crying. She's hyperventilating. She's snotting into the camera lens. She apologizes. Yeah. Her little
snot bubble. The ultimate epic snot bubble, which gets mocked in scary movies.
Yes, it does. And like in scary movie, it just like grows bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
It's so funny. So she apologizes to her parents and to Josh and Mike's parents. She takes full responsibility. And she's like, I'm so sorry. I made everybody do this. This is all my fault. And she's really upset. Do you think her apology is like super convincing?
I think it is. Yeah. And again, she improvised that. She was just given a little morning note that they're each given with, like they find them in a canister, I guess, in the morning.
Yeah.
And that hers was told like, okay, today you have to make a speech apologizing to, because you guys aren't going to make it. And it's interesting, like how she even says it at some point that like, for her, talking into the camera and using the camera is her way to feel like, oh, this isn't real. And that's part of what also makes the guys hate her so much. Yeah, I believed it. I thought it was such a good, she's phenomenal, Heather Donahue.
She really is.
Her improv is through the roof. She did great. I believed it.
She did great.
I genuinely thought she felt bad that she finally came to the reality like, damn, I fucked up.
Yeah. And I think her performance was done so well. And then I read people were hating on her. And I'm like, is it because she's a strong woman or what? I don't know. Whatever. Haters are going to hate, right?
Yeah.
So they make it another night without Josh, though. And outside the tent, Heather finds a bundle of twigs tied with blue fabric from Josh's shirt. And inside, she finds blood, human hair, and what appears to be human teeth and perhaps a piece of tongue or some kind of organ.
They don't tell us exactly, right? We're just I always had assumed it was like a tongue.
Yeah, I did too. But then I was like, oh, is it just some random organ? I don't know. But she hides it from Mike. Mm-hmm. And Do you think that was a mistake on her part, not being truthful to Mike about finding this? Or was she just like, he's falling apart, his mental health is in the shitter, I'm trying to protect him?
I think either way, people are going to judge her whether she told him or didn't tell him. I probably wouldn't have told him because of what you just said. His mental health state was far worse than hers, and she didn't want to add to it. So I probably wouldn't have told him. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think she was damned if she did and damned if she didn't, no matter what.
I agree with you, because he really needed her support. And I feel like that's how she was able to give it to him. She's also a mess, but she's internalizing it more and hiding it from him.
Yes.
So in the middle of the night, Heather and Mike hear Josh screaming in agony from somewhere in the dark. And they're using their camera as lights, and they're trying to find his voice. They stumble upon a ruined, abandoned two-story home in the woods, and it matches the description that the fisherman told them about Rustin Parr, the guy who was murdering the kids.
Yeah.
Do you think, so this is just based on assumptions, right? Do you think the film would have been more or less affected if we actually saw the witch at this point?
No, I think it would have been less effective, because it would have been so hard to make it believable that for the audience who were buying into this, I think it would have been like, nah, this is just turned into a creature feature. This is just a movie.
I think
in the long run, as an American, we hate ambiguous endings and we hate not seeing the monster, but I think it was effective. Yeah.
Yeah, I do
for
too.
For your first viewing, going in blind, thinking of the time. Yeah, I think it was effective.
I do have to admit, though, the first time I watched this, I convinced myself and my friends that Mary Brown was the witch. I was like, that's a witch.
Really?
Mary Brown's a witch.
That would make sense. And then, that way. Or that she wasn't a real witch, that she was just going out there to fuck with her. Mess around.
Yeah, or some kind of like mass psychopath or whatever.
Exactly.
But yeah, when we don't see her again, I'm like, at that point, I'm thinking, oh, well, fuck. So we'll never know. So they go inside this house. Would you have gone in that house? No. Mm-mm. Me? No.
Well, because they heard the screaming, I guess they had to, because they had to find Mike. But if it wasn't, it sounded like it was Mike, right, to them. Is that why they went running into there? I can't remember.
They thought it was Josh, because Josh is someone missing. Yeah.
That's right. Sorry, Josh. I'm mixing
up. No, that's group. Okay.
Yeah,
that's
they okay. thought they're looking for Josh, so... If it was any other noise, I probably wouldn't have went. I'd have been like, we're out of here. We'll call the cops when we get out of here. I'll call for help. I'm going to house the waxes and try to get out and call something and hope somehow some people show up or start a fire or do something like they did.
Yeah.
But since they were looking for Josh, I probably would have felt like I owed it to him.
Yeah.
I'm picturing myself as Heather, probably just because I'm a female.
Yeah. So true. I would have been, I don't know if I would be. Been brave enough to. I'm just going to be honest.
I'm not going to think I would have been. Thanks, bestie.
Yeah, so sorry. If you're going to go in the woods, I'm not going with you. I love you, but no. So they go
and leave me to die in the building. Okay, sorry.
I would feel really bad about it, though.
make a great video. Tell my baby kids I love them.
Yeah, I will. I will.
And in my family. Okay.
And I'll be canceled forever. So they go inside. The walls are covered in bloody children's handprints. That is so ominous to me. So creepy. Mike runs upstairs and he's frantically trying to find Josh because they hear the screams getting louder and louder.
Wow.
Heather follows. She's terrified. She's screaming to Mike, wait, don't go alone. All of that. We see that we hear Mike shout to Heather, I think Josh is in the basement, right? Mm-hmm. So he sprints down the stairs and then Mike's camera gets violently struck and the audio goes completely dead. Heather enters the basement screaming in pure hysterics. It's like guttural screams, right? Her camera pans across the room. We see Mike standing motionless in the corner facing a wall. Okay, that was fucking
freaky.
Creepy.
Yeah.
So creepy. Heather is struck from behind. Her camera crashes to the floor. The recording static for a few seconds. It's like that wobbly, creepy old static. And then it cuts to black. So, because it's so ambiguous, what do you think happened?
Oh, I think they were dead.
Do you think all of them were dead?
Yeah. I mean, you have to. What's the point of having a horror movie if people don't die? I think at the time it frustrated you. Like, that's it. But then if you're buying into the belief that this is real, you're like, well, they can't show us the dead people because then it's like a snuff film or like, you know, like you can't. It would be more like it would be. I don't know. I think because like you're thinking like Unsolved Mysteries is popular at the time. America's yeah. Most Wanted. You're thinking more like, no, because then like if we had legit footage, like they would have to show it at like a certain time and warn the public. It would be like that wasn't put in this like the marketing campaign like that they were going to show you dead people. So I remember being like, well, that's it. And then that's when you're like, was that real? And you kind of think about it. And like I said, I know you didn't believe it. I wanted to believe it because it was more fun to believe.
Yeah,
I hate ambiguous endings. And from a film class that I've taken, like people, you said Americans hate ambiguous endings, but it was needed. What did you think?
Yeah. I felt really disappointed with the ending then. I wanted that closure. I wanted to know. And going back, like rewatching it, I still kind of felt that way, even though I knew what happened. Reading some theories on Reddit. Okay, so I thought this was fun.
Which is more modern because there was no Reddit back then, I think.
right. So I read some theories. A strong theory that a lot of people agree on is that Josh was possessed by the Blair Witch to lure them in. Mike was then possessed and put in the corner so they could kill Heather and that Mike and Josh could carry on the lore with the Blair Witch. So that's a strong opinion I saw on Reddit. I also saw that Josh was the only one to survive because he was possessed and that Mike and Heather were dead. And then, of course, like we have the same assumption that all three of them did not make it. So that's, I don't know if I like, I guess like the whole Josh being possessed to lure them is kind of interesting. I could see that being a concept, but they don't talk about like possession and things like a supernatural thing. So it's really left to your own imagination.
Yeah. I think that's a believable theory. You know, this is one of the few movies where I never even put any thought into it. The only time I thought that something supernaturally, besides the witch herself, right? I guess and the witch is supernatural. But beyond that, the only other time I thought something supernatural was going on was when Michael's like, ha ha ha, I threw away the map. And you're like, okay, he's losing his mind. Is the forest messing with him? But then I put that up west because I was like, nah, he's just losing his shit from sleep deprivation, being lost, food deprived, all that.
Being hungry.
Yeah. So I think that's a totally believable theory. We have no way to know. So if somebody wants to believe that, I think for me, it was just easier to be like, oh damn, they all died. Like somehow, which doesn't make sense when you talk about Blair Witch. Cause then you think about, it's actually the story of Parr, right? The killer.
Yeah. Rustin Parr. Yeah.
I always just assumed that the legend was truly just a legend and somehow Rustin Parr's ghost or something of his. Of him was still around. I guess I never put thought into it. You just knew, you thought about how they said he would turn somebody around so they couldn't watch while he killed the other person. So in my mind, I was like, oh, they're dead.
Yeah. I didn't think it was, I agree.
So you gave me some ideas to think about.
Yeah. Thanks, Reddit, folks.
Yeah.
Reddit's basically my news source.
Yeah.
Out of all the moments in this film, is there a particular scene that makes you feel the most uncomfortable? Is it the end?
Yeah, it's the end. When you see, who's facing the corner? Mike, right?
Mike. Yeah,
when
Mike.
When you see Mike's body turn to the corner because you're like, oh, shit, he's like, that's it. Like, she's dead. Yeah, that was the part that got me.
Yeah.
The part that gave me the biggest creeps, like it's time to move on, was when they found the stickman figure type things. That's when I was like, oh, it's time to get out of here. Nope, let's figure no more. Like, let's go. If we're heading south, then let's just keep moving. I don't care if we're walking in the middle of the night. We're going.
I agree with you. That was definitely my breaking point moment too, was the stick figure things. And probably also another breaking point would be like making it to the campsite for the second time. That's probably when I've lost my shit.
Honestly. Yeah, I would have flipped out. I would have been acting like freaking Josh and gone crazy and done more.
Yeah,
than
I would be. I'd be cursing.
I probably would have flipped out. I probably would have flipped out on Heather. I don't know, because I feel like she's kind of the one. I felt she was very ill prepared. She just thought, we're gonna go out here instead of like, girl, get some legit maps. Make sure you know how to use a compass. Do your research. Besides just interviewing people about this random legend, get some more details about where you're going to go, have a time frame, have everybody have more food. I don't know.
For real, though, like maybe overpack? I know that must have been really heavy.
Yeah. But get like, you some MREs, like the dry food that they have, like in the military. They sell them at Target and Walmart, like the dry ration food where you can
use freeze dried.
Yeah. And it's like a very high protein, like a pack of an MRE, a meal ready to eat. It's like 2000 calories. You don't need that much. They would give us like three in the army, and like it would one could last you the whole day. Like,
oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
Because of that reason, it's just in case it's like one of your last meals. It's very calorie dense. It's, you ain't out there trying to eat proper. It's, you know, you're trying to get some calories.
Yeah. You're just trying to survive. Yeah, exactly.
Carb heavy. Which would be fine in this situation. Yeah, I got the most upset with her. Even though I got mad when we kicked the map about hearing about the map kicking, but.
Yeah, that was a little crazy. So with this viral marketing, like we talked about that in the beginning, do you think if they try to do something like this now, social media would totally ruin it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
People would figure out who they'd Google their names. You can't hide anything now. I mean, if you buy a house, is out there. Everything you do, like whether even if you are somebody who doesn't use social media, if you have any sort of like most like certain jobs, like it's all public, it's all what do you call it, like public research, like it's
public information, public knowledge, whatever.
Like certain things have to be disclosed if you're a public worker, if you work in certain types of employment, if you buy a home, if you do certain things, even like your information is out there whether you want it to be or not. You might have a whole lot less, but like people would be able to figure out who they are. You couldn't hide their faces. Now we have AI and we have cameras everywhere. Like, don't get me on a rant of the cameras.
The Meta glasses, like that is so fucked up.
Yeah, the Meta glasses, the flock cameras, there's so many things that's like, and I think that's part of what makes this movie so good. Without this movie, we wouldn't have all the other ones named at the beginning. That campaign wouldn't work, but hey, it worked at the time, and that was great.
It really did. This is probably, like, for the times, this is very creative.
Yeah, and they released a documentary, like, 2 weeks before it, like, claiming how they were lost, too, so that added to it.
Right. I forgot to mention that. Thank you for mentioning that. I remember watching that, too, and I think I watched it after the fact, though. Yeah. And I'm like, I already know this.
I watched it, but I had heard about it. So that made it more believable going to watch the movie. Because people are like, oh, but there's a legit doc about it. And you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I probably thought. I'm like, if they're going to show their like actual dead bodies, they're going to show it on the documentary.
No, they did not. But yeah, fun fact, like I remember when I first moved here, because I live in the DC area, I'm like, I'm going to go live near the Blair Witch. But I've yet to try to find her, and I won't be.
Yeah, you won't survive the woods. We already know. Stay at home. Don't go in the woods.
Yeah, I'm staying home. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about with this movie?
No.
Are you ready to close out?
Yeah, let's close this bad boy out. Let's get out of the woods.
Back in the air conditioning. So that brings today's episode to a close. If you enjoyed listening, the best way to support the show is by subscribing and leaving a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts. It helps people discover the show, so thank you so much. You can follow us on Instagram, Dreadful Dialogue Podcast, and visit our website, dreadfuldialogue.com. If you'd like to support our show further, you can do so by donating to our Buy Me a Coffee Fund. And thank you so much for tuning in for The Blair Witch.
Yes, yes. We hope our dialogue wasn't too dreadful for you. And with that, have a good one.
Bye. Bye.